I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning. It's wonderful to see you all in this in-between time of holiday spirit. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. My name is Jane Rago, and I'll be serving as your worship associate today. We are so excited and pleased to welcome our guest speaker, James Locke. James is a writer and a teacher. He has published 5 books and served as chair of the Department of Writing at SCAD in Savannah, where he taught for 17 years. Jim Cook will later bring our Love at the Center moment. And our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for the month of December is Choosing Hope. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, national origins, ethnic origins, and abilities. We warmly welcome you here on site and on YouTube, whoever you know yourself to be and wherever you are on your journey. If you are visiting with us this morning and you would like to introduce yourself, please rise or raise your hand. Gigi will bring a microphone over to you. As part of our commitment to accessibility, please do talk into the microphone for our folks on YouTube. Are there any visitors on this side who would like to introduce themselves?
Okay. Hello, my name is Jesse Knox, and I'm here with Bernie Booth and his family. We are visiting from the UU Church North outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in Mequon. So it's really great to be here. I'm the religious education director there. And so it's fun to visit another UU church. Thanks for having us.
Welcome.
Good morning. My name's Kim Huffman, and I kind of stumbled in here to hear James, who I've taken classes before, but I think we all stumble into things in our lives that are fortunate and good for us. So thanks for the welcome, and it's great to be here. Thank you.
Welcome. Are there any visitors on this side who would like to introduce? Okay.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Locke, and I am James Locke's wife, and I'm here to hear my husband speak.
And I'm Simon Locke, James's son, also here to hear my dad speak.
Welcome. Are there any other visitors? Okay. If you are looking for a new faith community, we encourage you to visit several times to get a feel for our worship style and our approach to matters of faith and religion. And it's so good to have all of you with us. Please join us in Ron Hall after the service for refreshments. And you'll find Ron Hall in the next building over. You can go through this door, out the front door, take a right, or just really simply follow the crowd or ask an usher. After the story for all ages and our offering, we will sing a short response. The lyrics you can find in your order of service. And there are 2 cards in the pew back in front of you to help us gather information for the good of our community. You can use the QR code on the Rainbow Chalice card to sign up for our newsletter and to receive a welcome letter from our minister. Or you can also just old school fill this card out by hand with a pencil. The card with the red heart and chalice is for sharing a joy or a sorrow. If you fill out either of these cards, please put them in the collection plate a little later on in the service. Church announcements are emailed to members and friends on Tuesday and Friday. Please check your email for complete details about the following. We're going to have a special New Year's meditation with Megan. So that's going to be a special celebratory session on Tuesday, December 30th at 6 p.m. in the multipurpose room. The session is open to all and will include special New Year's intuitive readings and blessings. We're going to have a religious education open house and town hall on January 4th, 11th, 18th. We're hosting a religious education town hall after the service on January 18th. And we will have two open house opportunities before our town hall. So one of them is January 4th and the other is January 11th. You can tour the classroom, meet our staff, chat with our kids, ask questions. There's also going to be a survey that will be distributed, and we really would like to have some feedback. The Savannah Band Books Group is to meet on January 8th because of the New Year's holiday. So this is Thursday, January 8th from 3:30 to 5 in Ron Hall. The text that we're reading is Something Happened in Our Town, A Child's Story About Racial Injustice. With the lighting of our chalice, symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we now enter into sacred time. Our chalice lighter this morning is Gwen Flaherty. Yesterday, our distant ancestors gathered around a flame to share their stories and to find comfort. Today, tomorrow, our descendants will gather around a flame, talking of a life we will never know. But today, it is we who gather here around this flame, seeking, believing, and being together. Thank you, Gwen.
Good morning. Good morning. I would like to start with a call to worship regarding something that has always puzzled me a little bit and intrigued me at the same time. And that is the first two lines of the book of John in the New Testament. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. So, let me do say this. In the original Greek, that word was logos. And logos meant reason, structure, and order. So that there was an order in the cosmos. So why don't we just contemplate that for a minute?
It's now time for the story of all ages. If you'd like to join us over here to listen or to look at the pictures.
Wow, that feels so important in this raised platform. The book for today is called Charlie Cook's Favorite Book. It's a book about books, which is surprisingly hard to find, actually, but we did. Megan did, and I thank you, Megan, for that. Charlie Cook's Favorite Book. Whole lot of books. Once upon a time, there was a boy called Charlie Cook, who curled up in a cozy chair and read his favorite book. So there's the first book in this story, one of many to come. His favorite book was about a leaky pirate ship that very nearly sank, and a pirate chief who got the blame and had to walk the plank. The chief swam to an island and went digging with his hook. At last he found a treasure chest, and in it was a book about a girl called Goldilocks. Heard of her? And three indignant bears who cried, "Who's had our porridge? Who's been sitting in our chairs?" They went into the bedroom, and Baby Bear said, "Look, she's in my bed, and what is more, she's got my favorite book." That book was about Sir Percy Pilkington. That's kind of hard to say. A bold and fearless knight who told the dragon, "Wait, wait, I'm not quite ready for a fight. You must hear this one first." And then his armor clanked and shook, and he read aloud a joke from inside his favorite. Doesn't give us the joke. Yeah, it's all right. But it does tell us what it was about. It was a joke about Rowena Redalot, a very well-read frog, who jumped upon a lily pad and jumped upon a log, then jumped into the library that stood beside the brook and went, "Reddit, Reddit, Reddit," as she jumped upon a book. What was that book about? It was about an oak tree full of birds. We've got an owl and a crow and some bluebirds. And I don't know, Jen, can you tell what that one is? We'll call it a lark. It's on a lark. About an oak tree full of birds, each bird had built a nest. And they had a competition to decide which nest was best. They chose an owl to judge it, and the winner was a rook whose nest was lined with pages from his favorite book. About a girl who saw a flying saucer in the sky. Oh, this is right up my alley. Some small green men were in it, and they waved as they flew by. She tugged her mother's sleeve and said, "Look, Mum, what I've just seen." But Mum said, "Hush, I'm trying to read my favorite magazine." The magazine was about a wicked jewel thief who stole the king's best crown, but then got stuck behind some sheep who slowed his car right down. The king got on the phone, and soon the cops had caught the crook and flung him into prison, where he read his favorite. How many books are in this book? This book was about a greedy crocodile who got fed up with fish and went on land to try to find some other kind of dish. And if you can see it, that dish happens to be a man running from it. The man went into a bookshop. No, the crocodile went into the bookshop. And there he grew even greedier while reading on page 90 of a large encyclopedia. That's a good rhyme. About the biggest birthday cake the world had ever seen, a team of royal cake makers had made it for the queen. The cake was so delicious that a famous spaceman took a slice of it to Jupiter. He also took a book. This book was about a ghost. We got our ghost story in here. Round a castle every night, carrying her head and giving everyone a fright. She kept it up till morning. Then she found a shady nook and put her head back on again to read her favorite. About a cozy armchair and a boy named Charlie Cook. Come around full circle.
This is our last Sunday together in the year 2025. And this year has been a wild ride. And our new year promises some turbulence as we continue to navigate these frenetic and fraught times. But right here, right now, let's pause in the stillness of this hour, in the beauty of this space, and in the comfort of each other. We may be stretched thin in myriad ways, but all of our hearts are deep and wide, and they are all beating right now together. So let's reach into our collective wealth of love and give so that we can continue to comfort each other, quiet ourselves together, and be each other's port in this storm. To donate via credit or debit card, use the QR code on the back of the order of service or go to our website and click the donate button. Mailed checks are always welcome. Thank you for your generosity.
I may be preaching to the converted today. I hope so. I'm here to talk about reading and writing, and to ask you to consider reading and writing as a technology. We live in a technology-saturated world, but I think we take for granted that the written and spoken and read word is a technology on its own. Let's go back 2,500 years. 500 years BC, Athens, Greece. What happened then? A huge cultural explosion of creativity and knowledge happened in Athens, 500 BC, 500 to 400 BC, in a city the size of Savannah. This period in history gave us the roots of our civilization as we know it now. Philosophers, Socrates, and his student Plato, and his student Aristotle, still form the way we think about things today. Playwrights Sophocles, Aristophanes, and Euripides formed stories in the way that we still tell stories today. Pythagoras and Euclid began the sciences of mathematics and the physical sciences as we know them today. And Herodotus and Thucydides began the study of history as we know it today as well. All this happened 500 years BCE. And that's just scratching the surface. Architecture, as we know it today. Look around Savannah and look for buildings that have columns, pediments, and pilasters. Those are Greek in design. Our fraternities and sororities are Greeks, Greek organizations with Greek letters. The White House itself is a classically designed structure. And not only that, but our government, democracy, was first experimented with in ancient Greece, 500 to 400 BC. It's kind of astonishing how this can happen in one city and in one part of the world. Since then, there have been other explosions of great creativity in the world. 14th century, 15th century, Florence, the Renaissance. 19th century and early 20th century, Paris, the rise of modernism. New York in the 40s through the 80s, great creative outbursts. All these in cities, all these at one particular time. Well, what causes them? Why does suddenly in one spot, in one location, knowledge and creativity explode? Well, in the case of ancient Greece, there was one technology that may have created it all. But first, let's talk about today. Is there a spot in the world right now where you see such a burst of creativity, innovation, and knowledge? Some would argue that Silicon Valley is our very equivalent of this kind of a creative explosion. And they wouldn't be wrong. The digital revolution has provided massive gains in knowledge and creativity. But is this access to knowledge making us smarter or more creative? That's a question I'd like to ask. Studies seem to show that it hasn't made us any smarter. From the 1930s to 1978, IQ scores improved by 14%. That's a huge gain in a short amount of time. People got a lot smarter in that period. They think it's because education was better and because diet was better. But from 2006 to 2018, something strange happened. In language and mathematics, IQ scores began to drop. Researchers aren't sure why, but the decline does correlate with our increasingly living on screens. And more recently, since the release of ChatGPT, a study at MIT took it a step farther. They hooked college students up to electrodes. I'm going to get a little wonky. I cite about 7 or 8 studies in this. They hooked college students up to electrodes and asked them to write short SAT-type essays. The first group had full access to ChatGPT. The second had access only to Google. And the third, the group they called the brain-only group, well, I guess you can guess what they use. They use no outside resources except their own minds. The results were stark as far as neural activity. The first group had full access to ChatGPT. The brains of those showed the least neural activity of all. The brain-only group showed the highest activity in their brains. The brain-only group was using all sorts of parts of their brains, not just a single part of their brain. And afterwards, the students who had used chat were the least likely to remember what they had written. In other words, use it or lose it. But let's go back to the ancient Greeks. What caused that massive revolution in knowledge and creativity in a century's time? In a city about the size of Savannah, a neurologist named Marianne Wolfe attributed it to what she calls the most revolutionary technology in human history, the written word. Wolfe studied the brains of young children as they learned to read. She found that the skills involved, the visual processing of symbols, the cognitive decoding of those symbols into the things that they represent, and the phonic aural processing associating words with sounds are extremely complex. Not surprisingly, learning to read dramatically expands the neural activity and connections in a child's brain. And studies have shown that children who are read to when very young do much better in life farther on than those who aren't. And Wolfe noted that between 500 and 400 BCE, Athenians were learning to read and write using an alphabet not unlike our own. Reading and writing were the new technologies, she concluded, that gave birth to new philosophies, mathematics, and geometry, science, sculpture, architecture, and storytelling. Their brains got bigger. But literacy, unlike ChatGPT, is not a technology that does the work for us. It's a technology that requires skill and active participation, decoding, reasoning, listening, and imagining. Are we trading away these advanced skills for the luxury of convenience? Every new technology has its trade-off. With the arrival of GPS, for example, many of us have lost the ability to read maps or even figure out how to get to Athens, Georgia, which is hard enough on its own. There was one ancient Greek who distrusted this new technology of writing, and he was a big one. Socrates did not write. He delivered his dialogues from memory. And it was memory, he said, that would be the first casualty when we started to write things down. After all, pre-literate people are known for their vast memories. Writing things down, Socrates said, would allow us to forget. He was probably right. But maybe this particular trade-off was worth it. After all, we would know little of Socrates if Plato hadn't written down his dialogues. What we lost in personal memory, we gained in collective memory. In libraries, we could now preserve our knowledge of the arts, sciences, and history, and pass it on accurately via the written word, which remains stable on the page. As many of us have noticed over the years, our memories can be very unstable. So now we need to consider whether the current trade-off is worth it. The upside of AI, like ChatGPT, is access to vast oceans of knowledge at our fingertips. A few weeks ago, my brother-in-law entered his mother's symptoms into chat and found a medication that her doctor had overlooked. That medication has made her life a whole lot better in a short time. AI can write computer code faster and better than ever. And in milliseconds, it can find a new margarita recipe. But what are the trade-offs? A downside of technologies like chat is that we're getting lazy and allowing our cognitive skills to atrophy. Is this particular trade-off one that we're willing to live with? How will this affect us personally, socially, and politically? Not surprisingly, fewer people are reading these days. A 2022 study by the National Endowment for the Arts found that 48% of Americans, only 48% of Americans, had read a book in the past year. This is a 4% decline from 2017. And only about a third of adults read a work of fiction. That's the bad news. That's what they call the sending you to hell part of the sermon. But now we're going to go to heaven, because there's good news too. We don't need to reinvent a technology in order to repair what's being lost. We can retrain our brains to forge new neural pathways. If short videos have compromised our powers of concentration, we can retrieve them. We already have what we need to grow and enhance our cognitive skills. We can move forward by moving backward. We can put down our screens once in a while, and we can pick up a book. As Marianne Wolfe has confirmed, reading multiplies our neural networks. It turns us into skilled decoders, listeners, and interpreters. At a more sophisticated level, we also get better at analogical thinking, understanding the metaphors, similes, and analogies which themselves create new neural connections in our brains. I haven't even bothered to mention how reading introduces us to different worlds, different experiences, and different viewpoints, enlarging our perspectives, just as Charlie Cook's favorite book reminds us. I assume we all take that for granted. And studies are showing us even more incentives to pick up a book. First, reading reduces stress. A study at the University of Sussex shows that reading for only 6 minutes a day reduces stress by 68%. It's more effective than music, 61%, or even taking a walk, 42%. Reading, the study says, creates an altered state of consciousness that creates calm and stimulates creativity. Second, and maybe most important of all, reading literary fiction can increase our ability to empathize with others. literary fiction as opposed to formulaic popular fiction by the likes of Daniel Steele and Lee Child. Nothing wrong with that. I read it once in a while. I just finished a book by Lee Child. Deals in characters who are complex and as nuanced and complex as we are. It requires readers to reflect on characters' unique situations. Understanding complex situations tends to undermine stereotypes and prejudices, helping us understand people who have histories different from our own. And third, let's not forget the power of writing. Yes, another study, this one at the Darmstadt University of Applied Sciences in Germany, shows that writing for 5 to 20 minutes a day can diminish stress, increase self-confidence, and kindle the imagination. Best of all, write with pen and pad. You'll remember it better because handwriting activates more of your brain than typing does. I teach a writing class for adults in which students use a technique I've devised to go deep, to explore parts of themselves and their creative processes that they hadn't considered before. This is another gift, courtesy the technology of literacy. And their work has been really impressive. So read. Read aloud to your children and to your grandchildren. From being read to, children learn to associate reading with love. Buy books as gifts. Even if your recipients don't read them, they'll feel guilty about it. And that's a start. Set aside a formulaic thriller or romance once in a while and pick up a novel by Jane Austen or Charles Dickens. Once you grow familiar with the writing style, and you will, they're really quite entertaining. And if you're so inclined, pick up a pen. Explore your own thoughts and feelings. Write a story or a poem. Maybe even take a writing class. Socrates would be suspicious, but Plato would approve. Thank you. For the benediction, I'd like to read a poem. First, a definition of terms. A courser is a word used in the poem. A courser is a small sailing vessel. And a frigate does not mean screw it. It's also a ship. The title of this poem is "There Is No Frigate Like a Book" by Emily Dickinson. There is no frigate like a book to take us lands away, nor any coursers like a page of prancing poetry. This traverse may the poorest take without a press or toll. How frugal is the chariot that bears the human soul. Thank you.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.